Radhika Jasa Sarasara Shishmani Dvanga Saisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Shrima Bhagavatam Grantaraj Ki Jai Gaur Pramananda Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Do we have the Bhagavad Gita? Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 14, Text Number 46. So this is the last text of this chapter.
Jaminetam sudhibrena Yunjucho jogino manaha Samyasyatyasu nirvanam Dhyayajnana kriya brahma Janinitam sutibhrena Yunjucho jogino manaha Samyasyatyasu nirvanam Dravya jnana kriya brahma Janina by meditation Itam as thus mentioned Sutibrena extremely concentrated Yunjitaha of one practicing Yoginaha of the yogi Manaha the mind Samyasyati will go together Asu quickly Yirvanam to extinction Dravyajnana Kriya based on perception of material objects, knowledge and activities. Brahmaha the illusory identification. Translation. When the yogi thus controls his mind by intensely concentrated meditation, his illusory identification with material objects, knowledge and activities is very quickly extinguished. Purport. Because of false material identification, we accept our own body and mind, the bodies and minds of others, and supernatural material control to be ultimate realities. Supernatural control refers to the bodies and minds of the demigods who ultimately are humble servitors of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the mighty sun, which displays immense potencies, obediently treads its universal path by the order of Lord Sri Krishna. It is clearly seen in this chapter that Hatha Yoga, Kama Yoga, Raja Yoga, etc. are part and parcel of Bhakti Yoga and do not actually exist separately. The goal of life is Lord Krishna, and one must eventually come to the stage of pure devotion if one desires to perfect one's meditation or yoga practice. In the mature stage of devotion, as described in this chapter, one becomes free from the artificial duality of meditator and object of meditation, and one spontaneously engages in hearing about and glorifying the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such activities of Bhakti Yoga are natural because they spring from spontaneous love. When one revives one's original nature as a loving servitor of Lord Krishna, other yoga processes cease to be interesting. Buddha was a pure devotee even before the Lord began his instruction. Therefore, it was not expected that Uddhava would give up the supreme platform of being a personal associate of the Lord to take up the mechanical exercises of the yoga system. Bhakti yoga or devotional service is so elevated that even the beginning stages of practice, one is considered liberated because all of one's activities are executed under proper guidance for the pleasure of the Lord. In the Hatha yoga system, one is concerned with bodily control, and in Jnana Yoga, one is concerned with speculative knowledge. In both systems, one endeavors selfishly, desiring to become a great yogi or a philosopher. Such egoistic activity is described in this verse as kriya. One must give up the illusory designations of dravya, jnana, and kriya, and come to the priceless stage of loving service to the Lord. Recite the verse again. Janene tam sutibrena yanjucha yugano manaha sam yasyat yasu nirvanam dravya jnana kriya brahmaha. When the yogi thus controls his mind by intensely concentrated meditation, his illusory identification with material objects, knowledge and activities is very quickly extinguished. So here Krishna, of course, is describing the effects of controlling the mind to the degree that the mind is actually focused on his form as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Which is higher than the process of meditating upon the Vishnumurti or the super soul within the heart. So he's describing the results of coming to the point of meditating upon Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, and he's describing that the results are that one becomes free from illusion. So that illusion, that one becomes completely purified. That purification from illusion means identification with material objects, material knowledge, and material activities. So the result of the perfection of yoga, meditation on the Bhagavan feature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and taking to the process of bhakti in order to meditate upon the Lord, is that one becomes completely free from all illusion, all material contamination, and that includes identification with material products, material knowledge and material activities. Material products, material knowledge and material activities, one identifies with those in the process of karma, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and astanga yoga. So in other words, the karma yogis, the jnana yogis, and the astanga yogis, or the jnana yogis, sometimes called raja yogis, or hatha yogis, they all have some illusory contamination by the material energy, and to some degree or another they're identifying with material objects, material knowledge or material activities. Only the bhakti yoga actually comes to the point of complete purification where there is no identification or involvement in any of those illusory thoughts or activities. So that's the result that Krishna is describing. this is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter. In verse number 15, Krishna says, Yunjam Ivam Saratmanam Yogi Niyatamanasa Santim Nirvana Paramam Matsamstam Adigatati. So again, here in this verse, the word Nirvana in Bhagavad Gita, as in this Srimad Bhagavatam verse, is quoted. Krishna says, thus practicing constant control of the body, mind and activities, the mystic transcendentalist, so he has explained also the yoga process in the sixth chapter, his mind regulated attains to the kingdom of God or the abode of Krishna by cessation of material existence. So the same point is made. The first point that Srila Prabhupada makes in this purport is that the result is cessation of material existence, which means that the goal of yoga does not include attaining any material facility. So it is the same point being made. Material facility in the form of material objects, material knowledge, or engagement in material activities. So the same point being made there. Further on, in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we see that Krishna again describing the yoga process, he makes the same statement with some further points. He says, Amit yikaksharam brahma vyaharamam anushmanan ya prayati chajandeham sa yati paramam gitim. After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the supreme personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. So again, Krishna in this verse is stating the same which is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He is describing the complete process and how other processes fit in as stepping stones on the complete path of Bhakti Yoga. So, in these verses, Krishna is describing that what is the actual process? The process is Bhakti Yoga. And one can directly take to Bhakti Yoga and meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service, or one who has insufficient knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead may therefore take to the step-by-step process, and therefore beginning from Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Sangha Yoga, and gradually culminating in Bhakti. So according to one's lack of understanding, insufficiency in knowledge, one may take to one of these different steps on the yoga process. So for those who are completely materially absorbed and have a complete material conception of existence, they may take to karma yoga process. For those who rise to the mental platform of existence and are absorbed in the mental platform, they may conceive of a negative material conception of reality, that the ultimate truth is impersonal, or it is beyond the variety of material existence. Those who are a little bit more elevated in their understanding of the reality of the absolute truth may take to the Astanga Yoga process, where they can actually appreciate, no, there is form in the absolute, and therefore they will meditate upon the super soul. But still, they are to one degree or another limited due to material concepts and illusion and ignorance, limited in their understanding of the absolute truth, and therefore there's still a tinge of impersonalism. So therefore they conceive of the Paramatma feature existing alone. They have no appreciation of the unlimited variegatedness of spiritual existence, which is manifested by Krishna's internal pleasure potency. So when they meditate upon the Supersoul, they're actually meditating upon the Lord, and his internal pleasure potency is not present or not manifested. So they're still influenced by impersonalism, but at least they have some concept of the personal form of the Lord, but there's still some impersonalism, and therefore they take to the Asanga Yoga process. So according to one's limited degree of knowledge, which means that to the degree one is still an illusion, still under the influence of material illusion, one may take to one of these processes of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, or Asanga Yoga. Whereas the Bhakti Yogi, who appreciates the personal form of the Lord and the Lord's spiritual potencies, which manifest all spiritual variegatedness, they have no problem to immediately accept the process of Bhakti Yoga, giving up the other processes. So in this way we see there are stepping stones to the complete process of which all bring one to the point of Bhakti Yoga. So there is in Krishna's Bhagavad Gita and here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very long statement which ultimately brings one to the point of understanding Bhakti and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The difficulty is, of course, is that people generally only want to accept a part of the statement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If they accept the full statement, they will follow either the step-by-step process and come to the point of bhakti. They will come to the point, as we described in yesterday's verse, where they will see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The living entities are related because they are his parts and parcels. They're a tiny sample of the Supreme Lord, and they have the same spiritual nature, the same consciousness, they have form, they have activities, but in minute. Even the material world, so they are considered like the particles of sunshine as compared to the sun. Similarly, the material world is also related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as the sun may create a cloud which covers a portion of the sunshine. So that is the realization one must come to. Until one comes to that point, seeing everything is simultaneously one and different from the Lord, to some degree or another, one sees the, a duality between the absolute truth and oneself. Either one has, you know, a material concept of reality, and in the material world, one thing is different from another. Or one may think that one is material and the absolute truth is spiritual, in which case they both appear to be different. Or one may consider that one is spiritual and the forms of Godhead are material, in which case there is, you know, duality as well. It's only when the living entity sees that they are one in spiritual nature and yet different in quantity, there is no more conception of duality between the meditator and the object of meditation. So that is Krishna consciousness. And those who come to that platform of understanding the Bhagavan feature and understanding that we are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it is natural that one feels an intimate relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is natural. Just like we see, you know, the mother and father and the child, because the child is part and parcel of the parents, there is automatically a natural relationship. Even if the child goes away for many years and then comes back, within a second that relationship is revived, because it's natural. It doesn't take 20 years after returning for the relationship to re-establish. It is natural. So therefore, the bhakti yogis, in their natural relationship with Krishna, there is a natural loving and affectionate reciprocation, and the processes of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, they're all based upon that natural reciprocation in love with the Supreme Lord, who we are part and parcel of. Whereas the processes of the yogis and the jnanis is a bit mechanical, because they haven't fully understood that intimate relationship. Therefore, when Krishna actually displays his Vrindavan pastimes, you'll see that there are no yogis and sannyasis in Vrindavan. Because it's not natural. The actual picture of the spiritual world is that everyone is somehow related by friendship, love, or somehow or another with Krishna, and they have so many different loving interactions. That is natural. So in that sense also, Uddhava certainly wasn't going to give up his natural, he's an associate, very dear friend. I think he's related as a cousin. So he's certainly not going to give up that, you know, natural relationship to do something else which is unnatural, which is based upon not understanding that relationship. We see also if a young child is crying, as soon as you place the young child, little baby, on the lap of the mother, then immediately the child, and you know, they get fed the breast milk, then immediately the child stops crying. Now, so many other people can come who don't have that intimate relationship, and they can try so many processes to settle down that child. You know, you can reason with that baby, you can logic, you can give philosophy, you can, you know, bribe them with so many different things, you can try and distract them, you can do so many things, they're just going to cry. And then you put that child on the lap of the mother, and then immediately the child feels, yes, now I'm in my natural place because I have an intimate relationship with the mother. Okay? So immediately like that. So our position with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is like that, and no other, you know, artificial method really satisfies. So the yogis, you know, the different degrees of yogis, in one sense, they're people who are not acting, that they have a dysfunctional relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You see, sometimes a child will have a dysfunctional relationship in their own home. It may be briefly, not continually, hopefully. So you see, sometimes the parents are there, the brothers and the sisters, and one of the children will decide that they're not going to behave as they should within the family. They're not going to behave according to the relationship with everyone else. They're going to act independently of that relationship and cause disturbance. So what happens is that the parents will say, so you go into your room and don't do anything, because what you're doing is a disturbance. So you go into your room and don't do anything, and you think about proper behaviour. You see how I practice that. So the yogis are like this. Or, you know, the karma yogis, jnana yogis, and astanga yogis. To one degree or another, they're acting out of their relationship with the Supreme Lord. So the Lord says, okay, stop that. So, you know, you stop those activities, and, you know, which is like, go into your room, and you think about what, you know, what is proper behaviour. So, to one degree or another, they're really practicing stopping the mind and senses from engaging in nonsense. And while they're doing that, they're trying to think of what is the actual engagement of the mind and senses. So they're like naughty children. From the perspective of God. From their perspective, of course, they feel like they're great, advanced, you know, personalities. So, if the parent, you know, then if they come out of their room, it's not expected that they will remain not doing anything as they were doing in the room. When they come out of the room, they should have considered what are the proper activities and start acting properly. So it's not like when they come out of the room and they're in the house and they also have to sit there and not speak and not do anything. So in other words, what they were doing previously has to be given up so that they can now begin to properly function in their relationship with the Supreme Lord. Krishna says the same thing here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, after meditating, and gradually you do come to the point of realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead and your intimate relationship with Him, and you naturally feel inspired to engage in bhakti, then give up that activity as the kami, the jnani, or the yogi, as those activities are no longer required. Right. So there we see there is a full instruction. So it's like if the child takes part of the instruction. So the child comes out of the room and then sits there with a pout on its face and doesn't do anything. The parents have let them come out of the room and they stop doing the nonsense, but they sit there, you know. And he said, what are you doing? Oh, you told me I can't speak and you know, I can't do this. So, you know, one who sticks to the process of yoga, karma, yoga, they're like that. They're like that. Oh, you told me I have to practice mona, vrata, silence. You told me. I cannot glorify, you know, the Supreme Lord like this. It's an anger. So they're not actually taking up the full instruction of the parent, they're not actually taking up the full instruction of Bhagavad Gita, they're not taking up the full instruction of Krishna. Having done, you know, these yoga processes, now engage in, you know, bhakti yoga according to your intimate relationship with the Supreme Lord. So there's many, you know, this is, of course, this is what people do around the world, is that they according to their lack of understanding of their relationship with the Supreme Lord, they follow, you know, they become very attached to certain processes, and they don't want to follow the full instruction, so they ignore it. That's how people study Bhagavad Gita, they, or any philosophy, Christianity, Muslim, you know, Buddha, they pick a couple of things, but they don't want to follow the whole thing. But very dangerous activity. It will cause them a lot of trouble. If one doesn't sit to oneself in one's natural position and always remains in an artificial situation, ultimately they're going to cause themselves some degree, they're in a dangerous position. I'll give you an example how following half an instruction causes so much trouble. One time when I was on the farm, I had just, because when I was on the farm, I had to personally earn every dollar to pay all the bills. So after many months of work, I'd saved enough to repair the dam. So it cost me so many $1,000s. So when they repaired the dam, there was a little overflow. So what happens is when the water comes a few inches over the dam, it just sort of trickles over a causeway. And the idea is that because it's grassed, it doesn't erode. But what happened was that when they put the grass in, it only just began to grow, and we had this massive big rain, and it caused a gouge in the causeway. And of course, once that gouge is there, and you get another big rain, it just increases and it gradually just takes away all the dirt, and then it can undo. So to repair it, what you do is you put hay bales on the gouge, so when it rains, it actually traps the dirt and fills up the gouge and stops it from getting worse. So there were two bhaktas. One was my nephew, and another one was this very independent so-called bhakta. So I said to them, drive the tractor. We had these square hay bales. You could pick them up. And we had to put, you know, a couple of dozen. So I said, drive the tractor down to the dam. Because we've just built the dam wall and it's a bit wet, stop the tractor at the beginning of the dam wall, pick up the hay bales off the tractor, and walk them over to the gouge and place them and peg them in. So they followed half of that. They got to the dam wall, and one of them says to the other, you know, Gunga's not really a farmer. Yeah. he doesn't really know what he's doing. It's actually a lot easier to drive the tractor across the dam wall, and we don't have to walk as far. So they followed. So they decided that they would drive across the dam wall. So what happened was, of course, as the tractor started going, you know, the wheels of the tractor are about that wide, probably about nearly a metre wide on either side. It caused a gouge in the dam wall, probably about a metre deep by a metre wide, two wheels. That's not the end of it. As they got across, it got worse and worse. And of course, you can't go backwards, you've got to keep going forward. So they thought, if somehow or another we can do a U-ey and get back to solid ground, we'll be okay. So they therefore caused a gouge in the huge shape of a fish tail all the way across. See? Caused untold damage. So then they came and told me. So I said, so now you have to take shovels and you have to fill up those holes. Yeah, seriously. Because otherwise what will happen is that when you get the rain, it will just destroy. So they had to, they did so much work in order to fill those. They never quite repaired. The scar is still there, I can tell you. So, but there's so much work. So, the yogis are actually in that position. It is very dangerous to follow half of Krishna's instruction. Because Krishna says, yes, take up yoga practice, But at this point, it has to be given up, because if you continue it, it actually becomes like an anchor that will literally prevent you from going forward in your spiritual life. Even worse than that, it can actually cause untold havoc on the spiritual path. Because, you know, as we described, the very nature of these different steps of yoga is that they are tinged with some degree of impersonalism, some degree of a concept that I am not the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To some degree or other, these different yoga processes are tinged with that concept. I am not the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means either there is no God, or I am God, I can become God. To one degree or another, if you accept it, either way you look at it, the danger is that that impersonal concept, conception, and disregarding the ultimate authority and one's natural position, means that one can literally justify any sinful activity. And you actually see that the most sinful people are those who actually claim to be one with God. Those who claim to be God are very, very sinful. You know, your average kami or vikami is, you know, can be very sinful. But those amongst them who claim to be God can be very sinful, because your average kami, they have some set of codes and morals, what have you. But one who claims to be God, they can justify any activity, and they will do anything. And very, very simple. So, you know, apart from the fact that, you know, one will definitely continue in the cycle of birth and death. And if we continue in the cycle of birth and death with some degree of contamination of the material disease, there is all chance that that material disease in one birth may flare up, and again, one falls from the platform of being a yogi to being a complete bogey. From yogi to bogey. As Prabhupada tells the story of the yogi and the mouse. That, you know, the mouse came to the yogi and was hanging around. The yogi, of course, being able to understand the mouse, you know, what is your problem? Why are you hanging around my ashram? Oh, I'm fearful of the cat. Can you make me a cat? So the yogi said yes. So he turns him into a cat. The cat goes away. And then the cat comes back. The yogi says, so now what is the problem? He said, now the dogs are harassing me. Can you turn me into a dog? Yes, now become a dog. So then he goes away. He comes back again. You know, now, you know, the bigger animals they're harassing me. You turn me into a tiger. So he turns him into a tiger. So then the yogi is seeing that, you know, so now he is not going away. He's just, the tiger is just staring at the yogi. So now what is it? Well, now I will eat you. So the yogi says, so again become a mouse. So unfortunately, that is the danger of the yogis. Remaining in material existence, coming up, 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 up to the point when now I am God, I again become a dog. It's a fact. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually explains that if the yogis do not meditate upon the transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they do not get the results mentioned in this verse. They do not become free from material contamination. Only those yogis who ultimately come to the point of surrendering to Vasudeva, they get the result in this verse of becoming free from all material contamination. To do that, to surrender to Vasudeva, means they must give up the, you know, dravya, jnana, kriya. All material, you know, identification, material objects, material knowledge, and material activities. So, here we see also in this verse that we describe, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 13, Krishna said, Prabhupada says in the purport that, it says, the devotees of Krishna enter the Krishna planet Goloka Vrindavan. For the personless, there is also innumerable other planets known as Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky, whereas the impersonless remain in the Brahma Jyoti. So if they remain in impersonless, at best they can attain an impersonal liberation, but they certainly cannot enter into the spiritual planets. So again, in the Bhagavad Gita, if we look at the 7th chapter, text number 19. Now, Krishna, the problem with maintaining an impersonal concept in one's meditation is that it will take many, many births to actually surrender to Krishna to come to that point. Krishna says, Bahanam Janmanamante, Gyanabambam Prapadyate, Vasudeva Sravamiti, Samahatma Sadurabaha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So, because they maintain this impersonal meditation, it takes them many, many, many lifetimes. And for them to achieve success is very rare. Now, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadamam Purityagyag, you give up all these other processes and surrender to me. So, an intelligent person would think, if after many, many lifetimes, millions of lifetimes, I have to come to this point of surrendering to Krishna, why not do it now and give up all the trouble? Why go through many, many lifetimes? I have to do it, so why not just do it now? That's intelligence. But according to the degree of one's sinful life and lack of piety, the trouble is one cannot understand Krishna. And there's the same chapter, text number 28. Yesham tantagatam papam jinanam punyakamanam tejvanga moha nilamukta vajanti mamdridhavrata. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are free from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. So therefore, Prabhupada says, the purpose of ISKCON is to stop sinful activity and get people to hear about Krishna. If we hear from a devotee the whole process, because a devotee is saying exactly what Krishna said. Just like, you know, if the mother says to the child, go into your room, you don't speak, don't do anything, and think about proper behaviour, and when you've done that, then you can come out and behave properly. That's the full instruction. So that, you know, one of the other siblings, you know, an older sister or brother may go in and explain that same thing. You have to stop being a nonsense and then come out and do this and that, and everything will be alright. So that's the whole instruction. If one hears from a devotee, they get the whole instruction. If you hear from anyone else, They will not represent Krishna's instruction, they will represent something else, and you'll get a different understanding of what you should and shouldn't do. You may get part of it, part of Krishna's instruction, and even that part may be distorted. You will only get the full instruction from Krishna. And if we hear that from Krishna's devotee, then you understand. Ultimately, I have to surrender to Krishna, giving up all these other processes. Why go through many, many lifetimes? Why not just do it now? So, if a person is very sinful and lacking piety, they cannot understand Krishna and therefore they cannot do it, and they must maintain these impersonal material conceptions of the Absolute Truth, and therefore they will take many, many lifetimes. But if they hear from a devotee, devotional service is so powerful, Krishna has described that, that if you hear from a devotee, even though a person may be the lowest, very sinful person, if they hear from a devotee, then the purification, that's actually devotional service. By hearing from a devotee, you are engaging in devotional service right then and there. And the purification is so powerful that immediately you become qualified, because you become free from all sinful reaction just by hearing. And just by hearing, you accumulate masses and masses of the piety required to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotional service is so powerful. No other process can give that powerful result immediately, within a second. Therefore, hearing from devotee, not only does one understand properly what should be done, but one gets the qualification to do it. And therefore, Krishna says, surrender unto me immediately, and an intelligent person will just immediately do that by the grace of that association with devotees and by hearing from Krishna. And that is the purpose of Krishna, of ISKCON, help people to give up sinful activity and give them the opportunity to hear about Krishna. And if they do those two things, they immediately become qualified to take up devotional service and save themselves millions and millions of lifetimes. So, any questions or comments? Yeah, that's they get it without trying for it. That's the yogis have to try for it very hard, and they don't get Brahman realization or Paramatma realization for many, many lifetimes. A devotee doesn't try for it, but automatically they get that realization. Just like one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, one of the ladies, asked Srila Prabhupada, she said, what is the Paramatma doing in the heart? Is he sitting down? Is he standing up? What is he doing? Prabhupada said, for that you will have to wait many millions of lifetimes. And she looked disappointed. Or you can hear from me and I'll tell you. And so I forget exactly, I think he said he's standing, but so just 1 second so we can conceive and we can understand in a second. Otherwise we have to wait millions of years to understand. Brahman realization means that one understands that aham brahmasmi, I am the spirit soul, I'm not this body. That's Brahman realization. And but full Brahman realization means that one also understands that the super soul is seated within the heart. So, devotees, we understand that I am a spirit soul situated in my heart, and a devotee can also perceive how the Lord is sitting beside them within their heart at every moment and always giving them inspiration. You know, a devotee listens to the super soul all day long. The super soul is guiding them. Do this, don't do that. And the yogis, they aspire for, millions of lifetimes to come to that point. That is automatic for a devotee. They can understand the super soul is prompting me to do this. And the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the super soul. So if we're not sure in the neophyte stages what the super soul is saying, we just hear the spiritual master. That is described here in this purport. That he says, Bhakti yoga or devotional service is so elevated that even in the beginning stages of practice one is considered liberated because all of one's activities are executed under proper guidance for the pleasure of the Lord. From the very beginning, a devotee is under the direct instruction of the super soul. If they're not able to hear the super soul within their heart, then they can hear the spiritual master who is saying exactly the same thing. So they get the same results. They get the same result. You know, the super soul, Krishna is so kind that, he appears internally as the super soul and externally as a representative of the super soul, that's the spiritual master. So, immediately a devotee wants to know, what does the super soul want me to do? They just ask the spiritual master. All these instructions, Prabhupada's purports, they're directly inspired by the super soul. We just read one of Prabhupada's purports, hear one of the lectures by the gurus, we're directly in touch with the super soul. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it says that for one whose mind and senses are controlled, the super soul is automatically reached. Very quickly, the devotee's mind and senses become controlled, and the results of being in contact with the super soul is achieved even from the beginning. For those, even yogis, who haven't controlled their mind and senses, then their connection with the super soul is more distant. So, Brahman realization is there, and super soul realization. But even more, the devotees are more interested in what Krishna is saying. Krishna is the super soul. The super soul gives instructions to the point of liberation from material existence and to the point of taking up engagement in devotional service. Here we're actually taking instructions from Krishna which are beyond those instructions, which are detailed information of how to follow in the footsteps of the Brajavasis. So that comes from Krishna's very confidential instructions in Srimad Bhagavatam and by associating with very, very elevated devotees who are representatives of Krishna. Representative of Krishna, one who can represent the super soul is certainly very elevated. But if they cannot represent the instructions of Krishna, which are beyond that confidential engagement, then they're not so elevated as the pure devotee who's actually a representative of Krishna in his original form. And the super soul also manifests as the, you know, Archa Vigraha. So, but again, you know, if you want to see God within the heart, then he has come out of the heart and he is standing on the altar. So, yeah. If we're having difficulty, you know, because our minds and senses are being engaged elsewhere, the Krishna says, you are really distracted. At the rate you're going, it will take millions of years to see me as a super soul. So I will come to you. I will come from Vrindavan. I will come from, you know, Navadvip, and I will stand here in Melbourne. So you can, whenever you want to look at me, the Lord of your heart, I am just there. So where's, you know, where is the question of difficulty in perceiving the Lord of the heart? That is, he is the Lord of the heart. But he is revealing a form which is even more confidential than the form he reveals to the yogis within the heart. So it is better. So yes, the, you know, the Brahman realization, Parabrahman, Paramatma, these things are all automatically, without, with very little endeavor, you know, achieved by the bhakti yogis. Any other questions? I'll just read one quick quote from a very nice. Prabhupada says in relationship to Haridasa Kaur, he says, Haridasa Kaur never wanted to enjoy the prostitute, but he tricked her to deliver her by giving her a chance to hear the holy name of the Lord while he chanted. Pure devotees chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and simply hearing this chanting from a purified transcendental person, one is purified of all sinful activities, no matter how low-born or fallen one may be. As soon as one is thus completely freed from the reactions of sinful activities, he is eligible to render devotional service to the Lord. This is the process for engaging the fallen souls in devotional service. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 7:28, persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose actions, sinful actions, are completely eradicated and who are free from the duality of delusion, engage themselves in my service with determination. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Purport, Anchalila, chapter 3, text number 126. Any other comments or questions? Hi, all glory to Prabhupada.